you can look at more than the plate. You can use your cameras and then some software behind those cameras to actually keep a memory of the different cars that are driving on a regular basis, so that you look for dents and scratches and stickers on the back and you name it, so that you can identify the car even if the plate image gets too fuzzy or gets blinded by the sun or whatever it might be, so that you have a better chance of charging the person who drove through. It's kind of all the rage right now, but it's not fully being used in a lot of places. It's kind of unproven. The other one is mobile phone tolling solutions, which a lot of people are very excited about and should be. They're being developed by multiple vendors. We actually saw a couple of them demoed, but none of them are actively deployed. These are all complete beta products. And I think when we went into this RFI process, we were kind of hopeful we would find one that had been deployed. And it doesn't seem to exist. The next page are some lessons for the RFP, or I should say rather the next two pages. These are some things, when I said RFP, so we did this RFI, the request for information, which really was just casting the net very widely across the tolling world and saying we want to learn about electronic tolling. The RFP that we will be issuing in the next several months is a request for proposal to replace our back office system, and it's much more specific. It's a true procurement process. And we wanted to draw some lessons from this RFI process into this RFP process. That was kind of one of the original goals. So some of the things that we've learned. The current approach of maintaining the lanes technology while replacing the back office technology is actually very feasible and common. That was how we had originally imagined this procurement to work, but it was very helpful to hear through the RFI process that that is what a lot of other organizations have been doing all the way along. That the lane technology and the back office technology can be and often should be dealt with separately. We want to structure this RFP to maximize competition among different types of software companies. So to your point, which you said earlier, you know, there are a couple of big players, you always see them at the table. If we did an RFP the way the tolling industry has always been RFPs, we would get the same old thing. We would like to do something that's more competitive, bring some more people into the process, some more organizations.
But still with base qualifications. I mean, they can be
yes.
very large players, but they haven't necessarily always worked with the tolling industry. Maybe they've also typically worked with the credit card industry or typically
Correct.
Worked with the retail industry, but can still be very established, credible
right.
Companies.
Exactly.
So that's the idea of approaching maybe from two vendors. Tolling and the billing.
Well, the lane technology.
Lane technology.
And that then, because we haven't seen great necessarily innovation there beyond what we already have, and then back office. And back office could be ultimately a combination of vendors, you know, that there are partnerships where, you know, somebody comes in and there are different types of products that are part of the proposed solution. I think we would also be looking at an integrator, right? So it would be a professional firm that would actually help us install and integrate whatever the technology solution is with the tollway system.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately there could be, I think with this approach there could be, you know, somebody could come in with a proposal that is the best account management vendor, best billing vendor, but you know, best kind of component parts of an overall system.
Yeah,
that way.
Very much. The third bullet has to do with something that we are driving toward through every bit of this RFP process, which is maximizing our operating flexibility and autonomy. So Christy did mention this earlier. It's one thing to know what you're going to do tomorrow, but you typically have these systems even the day after tomorrow. So as the industry evolves, as protocols evolve, and they will, because electronic tolling is new, and it's not a steady industry, maybe like engineering with very established protocols and, you know, things that you can expect and procedures that you follow. Things will continue to evolve, and we need a system that will allow us to do that. And as far as autonomy goes, a lot of tolling organizations in the past, and I think we fall into category two, have relied very heavily on the software vendors to maintain the system and to make even little changes to them, even the little ones.
Generate reports.
Generate reports, yes, the whole thing. We need more autonomy because it is, it's especially an organization of our size, it's very difficult to rely on the vendor for every little system need. And we need a system that allows us more of the driving capability, if that makes sense. The other thing that here at the bottom that we've learned is that we want to structure an RFP to include a variety of what we might call outlier functionality that could be optional. So a lot of the systems that are out there have the same typical core when it comes to financial management or account management, but they offer wildly different outlier functionalities like call center management. Some offer it, some don't offer it at all, or some offer half of it. Mobile phone tolling solutions, optical character recognition, that's when it actually reads the numbers and letters on a plate, or that vehicle fingerprinting that we talked about. These are things that we would like the option to purchase if we end up selecting a certain system with these types of outlier functionalities, but we wouldn't bake into the actual true selection process itself because you would get such wildly different results and you wouldn't necessarily want those outlier things anyway.
And I think there's the flexibility also to include innovations over the course, anything that comes up, right? So if the mobile phone tolling solutions are implemented somewhere and the response is positive, but also they figure out and work out the kinks,
right.
It might be
right.
Something we want to option to adopt, or something that's not even on the list because we haven't envisioned it yet.
Right.
Whatever
sure.
That thing is.
So. In the next slide, we continue through the thought process. We want to maximize in the RFP our functional requirements, saying a system. We would like to know how your system would be able to do the following, and we really want to drill down on even a detailed level for customer self-service. The capacity for self-service has expanded tremendously in the last 8 years. So we still do a ton of things by phone and by mail that if we could offer in a better, more accessible way by web, we wouldn't have to do in the same volume. Customer communication, right now we find it very difficult to segment our customer base and to correspond with them differently and to do kind of one-off business correspondence. We would want a new system to offer a lot more flexibility in that. Reporting and analysis, same thing. Christy indicated that we do have to involve our vendor in running a lot of our reports, and these reports are things that we rely on for daily decision making. So a new system would need to be something that we could really use on a more autonomous basis ourselves. And controls and audits. The newer systems all have a much better kind of built-in audit capacity and control capacity that would allow us to always trace a transaction back and understand who was involved and what had happened in a way that today requires a lot more manual research. That final piece there, not that we have to read through each bit here, each of those sub-bullets, but the idea is that it's one thing to select a system that sounds like it does everything you want it to do, but it's another thing to select a system that does what you want it to do, but that from a technological standpoint is truly sustainable. So a lot of the kind of typical tolling solutions out there tend to have a lot of tolling-specific functionality, and it's great, but they don't all have the same technological capacity. They're not all built on the same programming languages. They don't all have the same technological monitoring capacities. They don't all have the same ease of interfacing with other systems. These are all important technology considerations that we feel very strongly about making part of a new selection because it will define kind of our capacity to grow and evolve over time. We don't want to have our hands tied the way that they're currently tied. The final page here, same thing about future considerations and kind of how our RFI process is boiled down to some other decisions we'd want to make for the future. Let me advance to slide 14. From a violations framework perspective, we would want to seek a system that has the flexibility to evolve with minimal customization, none of this running around and reprogramming it every 2 seconds, to the violation notices parameters and the notices content. So the notices parameters would be things like how many violations do you get before you get a notice, and or how long do you let a violation go before you issue one. A notices content example would be, what does the violation notice look like? I mean, you want to change your violation notices over time. And right now, that's a pretty big list. In the future, it should be a much more, it should be a much easier process. We'd want to seek a system from a violations framework perspective that has the flexibility to manage two different types of accounts in a bit better of a way. So I think we had talked about earlier kind of an IPAS customer versus a potential IPAS customer. So even when somebody is a violator, from a technological and system perspective, they actually have an account. They have a violator account. That's how we track them. And that's how we kind of gather their violations together and their notices, and we know who they are. A more flexible or robust system would be able to manage kind of these IPAS accounts and these potential IPAS accounts in a way that would allow you to merge them or evolve them from one status to the next in a better way than we can right now. I don't know if anybody has any other thoughts about kind of the violations framework and technology, but those were kind of the two big realizations out of this RFI process for us.
Just for the edification of the group, we're looking at completing by the end of this month the interviews with the 26 different respondents to our RFI.
Correct.
And we are already in the process of drafting the RFP, which we anticipate to be end of April, beginning of March, sometime
Relief
like that. We'll
toward
be ready
the end
to
of
roll.
March, beginning of April. We're finalizing the drafts right now.
See, I gave you the out. I gave you an extra.
Which I appreciate
that.
Because there is, you know, the procurement process.
It goes through many steps.
It does go through so many steps. But at least our portion of it will be complete within the next 6 weeks. I can't speak necessarily to the much larger set of steps that occurs.
Where there are outside agencies beyond the tollway that need to review and approve, and they might have thoughts for us. But yes, the idea.
The idea is late March release.
And then there'll be a significant process moving forward. Obviously, there'll be, you know, review, evaluation, testing, and then ultimately some transition, you know, whether some transition of the existing system to the new system, and, you know, just there are many, many steps to the process. I think we've anticipated that the entire process will take several years, probably through, you know, 2014, mm-hmm. In order to, you know, really transition over to a new system. But that flexibility is really important. I know we have a couple other topics here which we can discuss, but I think that I would say the big takeaway is we want the most flexible system possible. We want to build something and make what is going to be a big financial investment in a new electronic tolling system here, back office system. We want to make sure that if there's some industry innovation 3 years from now when we're ready to roll this out, it can be much more easily integrated into mm-hmm. our system than we
Very
currently
much.
Have the capability of doing. If we learn something from the all-electronic 294-57 interchange or the Elgin O'Hare West bypass that tells us that customer behavior on those is different, we want to be able to change the way our system treats those customers or those instances to respond to the lessons that we're learning, which we just currently can't really do. So I think flexibility is the name of the game. And we'd like to also continue to have customer focus groups regularly. Patoy hasn't always done this, but regularly kind of reconvene these focus groups, because I think we learned a lot, and as we start to roll out or think about what a system might look like, that kind of testing could really be invaluable for us.
agree.
I mean, if you want to oversimplify that, I think that's kind of the overarching theme of the discussions we've had today, whether it's the approach to the violations, RFI, ultimately RFP, and kind of constant evaluation is kind of taking a different approach, a customer-based approach to all operations that we have. And I think, you know, from at least our early meetings here, there was kind of an overall discussion on the board that that was going to be the approach we're going to take. I think this goes, these are just the natural steps in getting to that end, so.
Is there any sense of how frequently you'd like to get that customer feedback from focus groups? Do you think annually is the right kind of time frame as needed as we kind of evolve this, or what's your feeling?
As needed.
Just whatever.
I think as needed, yeah.
I think that based on, as we evaluate changes in operation, implementations that we've made, I think that depending on the frequency of those taking place, that would impact, you know, because I think an effective focus group where we properly vetted it, and I wouldn't imagine to see large sways.
Right. So a feedback to changes, but also maybe at a strategic point in time, we might want to get some feedback on the front end before we put a change into effect, just to see how they're going to.
Yes.
It's
yep.
A little bit involved.
Okay, I'm just taking some notes. From a fleet policy perspective, out of this RFI process, there were a couple key takeaways. One was that we wanted a system that allowed for improved self-service with respect to plate management with each fleet account, and I think we've spoken to this a little bit earlier. You were talking about the capacity to do that on the phone, saying I'd like to assign this plate to this person or to this account.
It's a big thing. I don't know.
It's a great idea. and then you were talking about how hard it is just to keep on top of all the transponders and plates, even with just, you know, however many hundreds. But not to mention, you know, there are fleets out there with tens of thousands. And then seeking a system that allows for easier accessibility for account management, we've talked about, but also the different types of correspondence and different rules around communications for fleets. You know, they need different types of communications. They don't need the same type that an individual driver or family would need. And we'd like to better schedule them and kind of segment them off into their own group for that sort of thing. And then from the feedback transponder perspective, seeking a system that allows for the transponder deposits that we currently take right now, but also for the possibility of transponder fees, just in case there's a possibility that these transponders are so much more expensive or come at such a premium that we'd actually want to charge a premium for them. There's always that possibility. We've seen other tollways do it. We don't have to make any decisions like that now, but it would be great to have a system that would allow us to make that decision if we ever wanted to or needed to.
Okay.
Are there any other thoughts that we'd want to cover about the RFIs at this point?
No, I appreciate the thoroughness of the interviews and look forward to the information as the RFP is developed. And I think that we'd like to be, you know, kind of kept in the loop as that process goes on, the information that's included there. But I would defer to you, the staff, on that. But I think we're heading in the right direction.
You're looking at an iPhone as a transponder?
Well,
I know that technology is talked about.
That's the mobile phone.
In your pocket.
Yeah, that's there seem to be three or four major applications like that in process, and all of them use some form of GPS. None of them are deployed. They're all in beta. So it's possible, but it doesn't exist right now.
I was going to say there are kind of two sides to that question.
Right.
One is the technology, which is the, you know, whether it's a transponder or an iPhone or a mobile phone or even just, you know, a camera up there that takes a photograph of your license plate number and, you know, you have a license, everybody has a license plate number. But the other side is that account question of how all those entities, with all that information, so you get that read from that mobile phone or whatever, where do we send the bill? You know, is it is it the mobile phone provider that pays it? Is it another entity? You know, where do we send the bill for that toll?
And where does the dispute get managed?
You know,
I got double charged. Well, you know.
You got three people in one car with an AT&T iPhone, and they all get pushed through.
And there's not a good answer for that right now.
You know, to take it to the other end, as automobiles get smarter and done. I mean, at what point do manufacturers begin to include this hardware that we manage from a car basis?
And I know that the conversations that we're having kind of within the IBTTA, which has made a commitment as an industry group to look at interoperability, not just from the technology perspective, but from this account perspective, as tolling becomes more common, the auto industry is going to be an important partner. Because you're right, there are microchips now in cars, and GPS is built in, and you know, all of this functionality is built into smart automobiles that are, you know, you're well aware, I'm sure, are just more and more kind of the norm of what's on the roadway.
Is somebody talking to, like, General Motors about their OnStar program, about integrating into all the tolls?
Yeah, EasyPass Group is, IPTTA is, at every single tolling conference is addressed. There is.
But again, then it's just where does that go?
How's it flow?
What's the tipping point?
Where does where's the account for that car? How does that happen, and how do the different agencies access those funds as that automobile moves across the country?
I can't imagine that I have any tippings right now that has vetted, but I mean, it would seem to me that if, as you purchase that car or that phone or whatever, you would have to activate it through your, presumably your local tolling agency, but there would be some activation that's associated, otherwise you'd have to be driving through the dead transponder. But I'm sure there's more issues than I just came up with in 20 seconds.
No, it's a good point that there would be, the onus would be on the owner to go to the Illinois Tollway and activate it. And then the next question is, what are our agreements with all of these other toll agencies across the country? We've got 14 states that we have agreements with now, but what about the other states and other entities where you could drive, and what are our agreements there, and what, you know, what are the common understandings? So it is a complicated question, but clearly technology is going to come in and provide a solution for at least part of it.
Well,
right? One day.
Just a quick thought on that is that, you know, the OnStar system, it takes myself 15 minutes to set up that technology for the owner of the car and the different menus that they can buy and music and different uses, sound and safety and what have you, but it very well could be done by them, and then the cost of transponders is zero.
And then, so there's an activation, there's a part that you could activate within the OnStar system.
That could be part of the menu. Are you going to toll with this card? And just a thought, when you go back and sit with your with all these toll companies, and I'm sure that you already have had these conversations.
No, it's a good point. OnStar may be one way.
Because I'm sure we spent a lot of money on transponders that would be unlimited.
A lot of money on a lot of things probably.
And I know the guy that runs OnStar. I'm going to talk to him about it.
Okay, good. Great.
All right. Well, thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Very good.
I do have one contract. I'm just one on the paper. Item number four under business systems. I will take a motion on contract extension for contract number 06-0164, the Consolidated Customer Service Center contract with Transcor, increasing the upper limit from 1.8 $1.8 million.
Mm-hmm. To allow for another 3 months of operation. And then, go ahead.
Take a motion on that?
So moved.
Second. All right. Motion and a second. This is, as we're in the middle of our transition, With this is allowing us to keep Transcor on to allow for our toll activity and call center activities, and we're in the process of kind of breaking up a lot of the contracts, what they're doing, but this allows us to continue in that phase-in as we make the changes, and this is the cost to continue that above and beyond what the previous contract amount was. So.
And one reason that we would really like to continue this sort of phase-in is that we would like to find a better space for our call center. It's currently in a private lease. That private lease ends at the end of this year. We would like to, if at all possible, leverage existing state-owned property and then leverage a state-use contract with a vendor who could operate on that property. But that's easier said than done. And we're working through the process of finding the right property and the right situation. But it takes time.
Sure.
We are trying to find excess capacity at state facilities, in particular, where there wouldn't be something that's maybe close to our own system, where it wouldn't be a lot of investment to kind of build the fiber connections to hook up the computer system at the call center to our, you know, central computer system and back office system. But yeah, timing is everything, and it's getting these two to align is not going to happen overnight.
Are any questions? Roll call? Or do we need a roll call?
We want to talk about the board possibility.
Right.
There's maybe one more thing about this.
We talked about it in the briefing.
But it's not included in this extension. So if we want to do that, why don't we vote on the extension? And unless there's an amendment, I would say we vote on this versus.
Do we vote on this and then make you aware of what we'd like to do at the board meeting, because we just, from posting requirements, it didn't sound like we had time to do what we originally had intended to do, right, based on the posting requirements for these notes, for these items. What's the right thing to do?
I think that's right. I'm not sure if the desire of the board is to, the question is whether to consider this individual extension or look at the entire plan for the extensions, which is rather than have to come back to you
3 months
from now, knowing that right now we know that we're going to need that second extension, to consider that right now. If you want to consider both of those, because we haven't posted it on the public agenda, it would be something moved to the full board for full consideration. So you wouldn't need to vote on this to move it to the consent agenda right now. It would be to move to the full board the possibility to consider all the extensions at the full board.
And unfortunately, I understand that. Do we have the language set for what we understand that agreement would be to take to the full board, or is that still in negotiation? Or
no, it would just be an evolution of this language, essentially saying.
So we're
1.8 times three.
So the question is, do we want to, instead of then passing it as a proposal, we would take a vote on a policy, a nondescript policy, or no, I guess kind of a guiding principle on that. And then it wouldn't be on the consent.
What we've done previously is we've amended it here at the board meeting. If something's incorrect, we've noted it, or if there's a change, we've noted it, and we've, you know.
The difference here from what we might have had before is where we have an agenda at this meeting where it properly describes the action to be taken, and within the limits of that action that is noticed, that there's a change and we amend it, and that's fine. The difference here is that what notice was provided was the approval of one 3-month extension to the transport contract. And what is being discussed now is, well, for efficiency's sake, seeking pre-approval of 3 months.
I mean,
there's a difference with the notice.
I think we could do it one of two ways. We could defer action on this specific item and post it on the full board agenda as essentially 3 times 1.8 million, or you could vote to move this to consent agenda, knowing that we would post both on the full agenda, the 1.8 million and the 3 times 1.8 million on the full board agenda. And should the board approve the 3 times 1.8, you would remove this item from the consent agenda. Makes sense.
It does, and that gives the option.
We just, frankly, what happened was we saw this item, and frankly, I had a brainstorm on Friday. Why are we doing something that requires us to come back to you 3 months from now and another 3 months from now when we know we're going to need this probably through the end of the year hopefully sooner, but possibly through the end of the year to make this transition happen. So I'm sorry that we're having to do something on the fly now, where if I would have had this brainstorm only a couple days earlier, we could have avoided this entire conversation. But it
will come in handy again. This might set a precedent that if we ever had to do something like this again.
I just think it's better than wasting. If we know that we're going to need it for longer, then the reason the three-month term is important is for our CPO process and the process we have to go through with the state. These emergency extensions can only be three-month increments, so we're going to have to go back through that process multiple times. So I think it was the board process was mirroring that process, and it didn't necessarily need to. We can get the authorization to accommodate the entire.
My thought on that is, I think we'd be well served to defer on it at this point, send it to the board so that there's, because I do think from a policy standpoint, the idea of turning over what would be board action required every 3 months to see this, stay on top of it, versus deferring that much on, you know, almost $2 million three times. You know, I think it's a significant policy discussion that I think we should at least open up to the rest of the board. So with the understanding that there's a motion on the floor to pass with a second, as I have to take a motion to defer this to the full board. Does the motion consent? You would consent to that?
Yeah.
In the second? So all those in favor of deferring to the full board signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Okay. Public comment. Unfinished business, is there any? Does anyone have any new business? I'm aware of no executive session. I'll take a motion to stand and adjourn.
Like that. Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.